also fine. That's also fine. Don't. Okay, so we'll go to the next slide if we can. I think it's Mount Rainier or something like that in, is it either Alaska or the States? It's not, in fact, Ben Nevis. Okay. This is what I'm going to talk about. First of all, the question, you know, what is wave or how is it generated? Anybody any ideas?
Displacement, or it's able going over ridges and have been at a wind speed, that then the waviness generated by the ridge is usually in sync with other ridges behind it to
phase.
Yes, in phase, right?
Okay.
To be in phase to this speed.
So when you say stable air, can you say a bit more about that?
Well, it has to be, from what I know, stable to avoid too much mixing in the air, so the whole thing feels more like a cafe of layers of air, if you like. But then I think that was also in the Berlin paper, they said that it often happens when you've got quite unstable layer at the very bottom.
Yeah.
So it can conform to whatever stable layer will look like. Yeah, so you've got like a non squishy, stiffer air or a very.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? I'm certainly not going to go into the physics of it tonight. I'd like to understand, I'm afraid to even understand the physics of it. But my explanation will be something along the lines that you've just presented with perhaps a fraction more detail. But that's basically it. Anyone else got anything to add to that?
Can we be generated by. Like waves on the sea, a layer above.
Good.
Or does it always get created?
No, there's loads of different waves. Wave can be generated by coming over a frontal system. Wave can be generated by two different air masses. Wave can be generated by clouds, streets, for example, air flowing across. You know, the northern hemisphere, the airflow tends to veer as you get higher. So you can have a situation where you've got cloud streets and then the air streets and the air above it's going almost at 90 degrees.
Yeah,
in the
cloud.
So there's lots of different ways you can get wave generated, and that's why I would say to you, when you're flying, particularly if you're flying cross country, but when you're flying on the hill as well, always be aware that that's a possibility. And again, what I'm going to try and get across to you tonight is some understanding of how that will affect the air and what it will feel like. So you can be aware of that and be also aware of what your options are maybe in terms of using that. Okay, we'll go to the next slide. Now, I was going to give you a word of warning. I tried my level best with a thing called Sketchpad, and believe it or not, I think I'm a reasonable artist. I'm just checking that out with Mo at the front there. I'm a reasonable person with a pencil anyway, but with a mouse, trying to do the same thing. I have to say I found that rather difficult, but I did the best I could. Okay, and yes, my model, it's not my model, but it's the one I got from the textbooks, the one I grew up with, is basically this idea that you've got a stable layer of air, alright, and as I understand it, the crucial bit is that's got to be sandwiched between an unstable layer beneath and an unstable layer above. And as you said, I think what it means is that the unstable layers kind of like don't damp out any movement, all right? They're kind of springy. As I say, a physicist would probably cringe at what I'm saying here, but I think it works in terms of an explanation, and that's what really counts. So you need that kind of layer. Now, what that actually means, what do we mean when we talk about a stable layer of air?
An inversion.
And what does that mean? Who was it said inversion? Okay. What is that? What is that?
Colder air lying below. Colder air lying below one layer.
Yeah. And what about an unstable layer?
Air that's mixing.
Not so sure about that.
No.
Well, air that has a potential to mix.
It's got a proper gradient. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's an opposite gradient. So if you introduce some instability to it, it will then start moving.
Yes.
So what,
why doesn't it stop?
Well, because of the difference in potential work, in that case, temperature, is greater than the gradient of change as the things move.
Yeah, yes, I think that's broadly the case, isn't it? You have some physics background?
Yeah, I did a bit of paper flying as well.
Okay.
Not on wave, but.
Okay. When we talk about an unstable layer, we're talking about a situation where the atmospheric, environmental lapse rate, okay, is higher than the dry adiabatic, and that means without mixing lapse rate in the thermal, okay. So as the bubble of air rises, it expands. And it cools. We're all okay with that? Yeah? And we're assuming, as they're saying, I don't know, I assume it's physicists and meteorologists are saying, it's not mixing at all, okay? It's just rising like a hot air balloon without an envelope. And as it rises, it cools. And shall we say that cools at roughly 2 degrees per 1,000 feet? Okay, roughly. And so if you've got an environmental lapse rate, let's say 3 degrees per 1,000 feet, then that's going to keep on rising, and it's never going to reach a point where it's at the same temperature as the air around it. So in that kind of circumstances is when we get thunderstorms and so on and so forth. Okay, so that's unstable. And as you rightly said, a stable layer is quite simply one that gets warmer as you go up. So if you release a thermal into that, it reaches a point where the surrounding area is the same temperature, so it has no buoyancy, so it stops. Okay. So you would know that there is a possibility of wave if, when you look at your weather information in the morning before you come out, if you see the presence of an inversion. Okay? Is that okay with everybody? Yeah? No questions? Okay. Now, if we again look at the textbook, this is what it gives us, requirements for wave. An obstruction to the prevailing airflow. I rather like that, because I've never really thought of mountains and hills as obstructions. Okay, that sounds to me like a brick resting on the ground or something like that, or articulated lorry. But that's what they mean, bridges or mountains. Okay, fairly obvious that bit. Now, the wind within 30 degrees is perpendicular to the obstruction. Now, the reason why that's important, I want to say a little bit more about that, is that probably most of us think in terms of the wind. You know, we're used to flying the ridge, and so on and so forth. We probably think of the wind as needing to be about 90 degrees to the slope, okay, or perpendicular to the slope. But in practice with wave, it can easily be up to 30 degrees off. Now, what that means is that your wave, when you're flying the wave system downwind of the hills, it may not, in practice, be a dead straight line, okay? What it tends to be is almost like a facsimile of the range of hills that it's gone over. So it will take on all the different shapes and forms of those hills. And that's, you know, I'm telling you that so that if you're ever following down a wave bar and trying to track along the wave, you need to be prepared for it to kind of dip up and down, switch left and right, and so on and so forth. And also you need to be prepared for the fact that it may not look like a classic lenticular. Okay? A lot of the time, like I say, it's pretty raggedy, it takes on the shape of the hills. You know, if you can deal with that degree of being out of wind. So if you like, if this was the ridge, you've got the wind coming on the hill there, you'd expect to have sort of straight wave bars behind it. Okay, but if you had, this was the main ridge, then you had another ridge not more than 30 degrees off of the side, that would still be reflected downwind. So you could still have a bar, and then a bit off the end, it goes like that. Okay, that would still be propagated, or repeated downwind. Is that okay with everybody? So, you know, like I say, don't expect to see nice uniform bars all the time. I've done a couple of wave cross countries this year in the sail play, when it was barely detectable. You know, it was more like a cloudy sky with some blue gaps, and it really did zigzag up and down. And if I'd been looking for straight bars, I wouldn't have gone anywhere. But it was just the fact that there was a blue gap, and I thought, right, something must be forming a blue gap. and it was flying along what looked like cumulus, but getting wave lift whilst doing that. Okay, but having to cut backwards and forwards. Okay, minimum of 25 mph. Now this is what it says in the text. It says in the textbook, and I'll come back to this later on. It says a minimum of 25 mph wind, the height of the obstruction. So at the top of the hill, it's got to be 25 mph, and that immediately says no paraglide. Okay, so there's no problem. There's no safety issues. We don't fly. Okay, but I put some question marks against that. All right. So some of you, or maybe some of the people who are here tonight, are thinking 25 mph for wave. What's my point? What's the point of going to talk about wave? We don't fly wave. Okay, and that's really what I've said. The point of this evening is to say, well, yes, we can, but we need to go into a bit more detail. The stable layer, as we said, at the top of the obstruction or above, and again, the textbook talks about increasing wing speed with altitude. Okay, everybody okay with all those? Splendid. Next slide. And this is your classic, nicked it from a textbook or nicked it from somebody else's slides. This is your classic illustration. Okay, and obviously we've got your standard lenticulars, primary wave, secondary wave, tertiary wave. That's obvious, you know, 1, 2, 3, third wave down from the obstruction. You may have kind of like plates layered up. We've all seen that at one point or another. So you might have multiple layers, and it's drawn in the rotor at the bottom. You don't always get the rotor. Okay, so that, again, I'll explain why and so on later on. Apparently, it's when you get a rapid change in direction, you get the rotor. The stronger the wind, the higher the frequency of the wave, and the bigger the change of direction, the bigger the rotor you get. Okay, so again, in light winds, you tend not to get a rotor. On the ground here, I've never really experienced it in the UK where you get a change in wind direction. In my experience, what you get in the UK is bands of, you're underneath the trough here, you get hardly any wind, okay, or much lighter wind. So if you live in that sort of spot downwind from a wave generating hill, you might come out the back of your house and say, well, Rask has given me 25, but seems like it's flyable here. Let's go and have a look. Okay? And I'll talk about this again in a bit, but the pattern tends to be under the rotor or under the trough, light winds. Under the bottom here, I say under the peak, correction, light winds. Under the trough, strong winds. And you find that pattern. And that pattern could continue for 50 miles. Okay, from the hill, depending on, again, I'll show you a picture in a minute to show you just how far that propagation could go on. But it could continue a very long way with a decent wave system. Okay? But hold that in your head, this idea that you can, you know, if you were driving along directly, you know, directly into wind towards the back of Tinto or whatever, okay? You might well on a wavy day, and again you wouldn't be going to Tinto on a real wavy day because it would be too strong. But you would experience periods looking at the trees as we all do, looking at bushes and all these other things, you'd go, not much wind. And then 15 minutes later in the car, the trees would be going like this. And then another 15 minutes later, you think, oh, isn't that strange? Or if you're a good paraglider pilot, you should be doing that, obviously, because you're checking the wind as you go along. How to your driving, as Mo often says. You'll get killed in the car, you won't get killed in a flying machine, because you're always looking at the sky and looking at the wind. But that's what you'll notice. Even if you have noticed that in the past, that's what's going on. Okay. Cool. So if you go under these different peaks and troughs, you get that effect.
Those troughs and peaks, would they stay more or less in the same place?
Yeah. Another name for this, they're sometimes called gravity waves, they're sometimes called standing waves. Okay. So although what you've got here is it like a river of air that's going along, you know, could be going along to 60 knots. Okay, 25 to 60 knots. So it's hammering along, but once it's had that shape imposed upon it, it keeps that, you know, it kind of resonates downwind. Okay, and it keeps rough. I mean, sometimes you might get the primary might be a bit higher, so it's a bit like hitting a tuning fork or something like that. It might go a bit higher at first and then level off. But again, depending on the met conditions, if you've got good met conditions for wave, then this pattern can go on for sometimes hundreds of miles.
What tends to be the cause for the wind actually go up once it hits the
construction, because I can understand why it would stay that way once the road is there, but for the wave to begin, it would need to be pushed back up, surely, you know?
You mean not here, but here?
Yeah, why doesn't the wind just keep doing that if there's no
road
yet?
I think the clue is possibly, this is the bit I looked at, but I'm not going to be able to grasp this and get it across. And do I really need to get it across, which was what I came to next? It's a good question. I think something happens here. When it goes over the top, this is where the critical bit, it's not really that bit that's doing the wave creation as such. It somehow fits in here, and then its buoyancy carries it up again. It's something to do that. You need to read the section on gravity waves, to know exactly why it kicks up here. I mean, later on tonight, I'll talk to you about a thing called hydraulic jump. Okay, don't worry about the name, but it's a situation where you've not got perfect conditions for wave as such, but what you get is it curves over the first hill, kicks up to about there, and then just goes level. Okay, it's just a one. I call it a flick. The textbooks call it a hydraulic jump. Okay, I've flown that once coming off Tintern off the back of Coulter, which gave me a nice ride down towards Jeddah, I think. So you know, we do experience it, or it's there. Okay, I'll talk about that later, but I can't tell you the physics of why. The physics of why. All I know is it obviously does that.
I remember that on the way up, it's got moisture on it, so condensation happens at the top of the hill, and then the air's drier.
Is that not the Fermi effect or something?
And then what about what the reason?
It then descends.
The air is warmer and then descends. Right. Like a boiling effect on the other side.
Okay. So presumably something like that is happening with all these lenticulars as well, isn't it? Because they're kind of.
Well, that will depend on what the lapse.
Lapse rate, moisture content, stuff like that. Yeah.
Numerous changes in the lapse rate, the altitude.
Right. Okay. So in terms of sort of classic things that you see, and again, I think we'll probably all have this picture of lenticular clouds. You know, if it's wavy, then there's going to be lenticular clouds. Can anybody tell me anything about the formation of lenticular clouds? What's going on there? Why are they stationary? Why don't they do the same thing as cumulus, you know, whip along in the wind?
Like an orographic type.
Yeah?
They're not forming and decaying at the same time.
Good. Who was that again? Can you tell us a bit more about that?
That's just rising and coming by the wind.
So you said like an orographic cloud, you said when it's rising. Yeah. Yeah, so basically as it comes over the wave on the way up, it's condensing out and forming the cloud, and then on the trailing edge, it's evaporating as it comes down. Okay, so that curve will stay in the same position, and those clouds will obviously stay in the same position.
How long does it stay in? 3 hours?
It can be all day, or it can be a few minutes. Okay, again, depending on the Met conditions. If the Met conditions remain constant, pressure, temperature, wind strength, wind direction or wind velocity, if everything stays the same, then the wave pattern will stay fixed. Okay, might vary a bit with change. I mean, again, we get a change in temperature usually because of the diurnal variation in temperature, so you might get a slight change throughout the day, morning, afternoon, and back to evening. But all I'm really saying is if the Met conditions remain constant, then the wave will remain constant.
So that was it is constant in theory. So it goes just like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Until the energy goes back up?
Oh, right. In terms of how far it will go.
Uh-huh. And what's the pitch, the distance between?
Yeah. Everything will stay the same. And if you get one of those variables change, like the pressure, the temperature, the wind velocity, or whatever, then you might find the amplitude changes, or the frequency changes,
mm-hmm.
or it just disappears, it just dies out altogether. Okay, so it can either get stronger, weaker, disappear, or its basic parameters will change, its depth might change, its amplitude might change, or its frequency might change. For you guys, and for us, what I want to emphasize is this idea that, you know, if you see wave bars, that's a pretty clear indication. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to encounter wave. I mean, very often when you go up to Glencoe, you can have a great thermal soaring day, but but with wave bars way over your head at about 12,000 feet. Okay, so it doesn't necessarily mean, but again, I've had a couple of flights from Glencoe, from White Corries, where the nature of the thermals has been affected by the wave above. Okay, but you're not going to get into that wave, and you're not going to be badly affected by it. So it depends on where you are.
Wave bars always have to have a particular, very smooth, lenticular shape.
No,
it can't maybe be quite fluffy.
Yeah.
It can.
Yeah.
So remember, I don't know if you know, Ken Bragg in your Glossby, we were on there one day, and it's the other side of the Moray Firth from the Cairngorms.
Mm-hmm.
The wind was southeast coming over the Cairngorms. We were wanting to fly on this hill. It was very on and off on the hill, but it was just really clear bars radiating from the Cairngorms all the way over.
Yeah.
It was amazing. But it weren't.
They weren't classic lenticulars. No, very often, as I say, very often, particularly in Scotland where it's quite damp, can be quite damp, what you want to look for is the blue gaps.
Yeah.
And they're always, well, not always going to be there. Sometimes you'll get 8/8 stratus, and there'll actually be a wave system in it.
Of course you can't see it.
But of course you can't see it from the ground. You might see lines of darker and lighter patches, but typically look for the first thing to look for is across the wind, you know, like streets, but across the wind direction, with blue gaps. Right, so don't look necessarily for the lenticulars, but look for the blue gaps, because if there's a blue gap there, that's what's going on. Okay.
Tony, if you've got hills behind, can they have the effect of either cancelling out the wave?
Absolutely so, yes. If you've got hills behind, you mentioned phase, and I'll explain phase in a moment for folk who are not so sure about it. But yeah, they can either have the fact of attenuating or amplifying the wave system to keep with that kind of nomenclature, as it were. Any other questions? Any other questions before we move on? We moved on anyway. Okay, what I've given you there is a picture, obviously, from the sailplane, but it's just to give you an idea of what they actually look like. Okay, when you're up sitting in front of one, slightly above in that case. And if what I want you to particularly notice, this is near Cooper. And you can see the North Sea there at the top. But notice the shape, not so much of the wave bar itself, but look at the shadow on the ground. And you can see there, it's a long way from being a classic lenticular cloud. Okay? It's got that undulation shape, which is really a reflection of the shape of the hills it's going over, as I said earlier on. Okay? So really just to give you an idea of what you might be looking for. Okay. Now this one, again taken from a sailplane. At the top there, you've got your classic lenticular. We all recognise those. And yeah, a little bit of a warning sign. Okay. Usually it takes a fairly strong breeze to create something like that. At the time this photograph was taken, the glider was flying along a wave bar. Alright? That was the wave bar. So it looked like a cumulus. Alright, so not your classic lenticular there at all. Okay. So often you get obviously different layers, but also different types of cloud in those layers. The upper layer, the classic lenticular wave bar. And the lower layer, again, if we had a broader shot, or if we were looking down from a satellite, as we will in a minute, you'll be able to see with this one, there's a very clear blue slot in front of it. Okay, and another very clear slot, blue slot behind it. But the actual cloud just looks like cumulus. Okay, so it may not be that clear.
That would be quite stationary as well, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's blue slot, and the fact that it's stationary is a clear sign of wave, basically. Okay, those are the two sort of classic things. But again, on a dry day, there may not be any cloud at all. Okay. Now, this is the same day, but looking down from a satellite. And you can see that shape I was talking about, which I think there we are, we would have been just about here somewhere. You can see that shape, which again is a reflection of the shape of the hills. Obviously, some areas filled in, got a bit more moisture, so you've got 8/8 cover, which is another thing you kind of got to be thinking about if you're flying away, that you might end up with things closing in underneath it. It's not the end of the world, we'll talk about that in a minute. The other thing I wanted you to notice really from that shot, I could see iron when I looked at it, it's been trimmed off somewhere. Ireland is obviously here, okay? Some hills in Northern Ireland, a generating wave, and you can see that wave goes right across the Irish Sea, and impinges on Wales and central Britain. Okay, so that wave system, you can see how far it's propagated, and you can see wave here, which is being propagated possibly in the Lake District, possibly in the Pennines, but going a long way. This will be down by Coventry here, York there, so a long way downwind from the hills. I mean, that's what I wanted to impress upon you, because some people think about, oh, well, if we're not within 10 miles of the hill, it can't be wave. Or some people say, on Tinto, well, the Highlands are way across the Central Belt, it can't be wave. So the reason why I'm showing you that picture is just to show you how far it goes. And it's probably not the best picture, because I've seen pictures where the wave goes across to Holland, across the European mainland.
What height are those clouds on?
On that day, they were about 10,000, between 10 and 14,000 feet. 10 at base and about 14 at top. Depending, again, not standard. In some places they'll be that high, in some places they'll be higher. So it's not uniform. Again, it depends on what it's going over, and it depends on the qualities of the air mass in that particular region. But broadly, as I say, in the area of Fife and so on, it was about 10 to 14,000 feet. It can vary. Any questions around that? Okay, but that gives you a feel for the scale of it, really. But what you've got to remember, this is a classic wave day. I think the wind at 10,000 feet was about 36 knots. The wind at hilltop height would have been about 25 to 30 knots. So there wouldn't have been any paragliding going on at all, I would hope. Okay. So big classic wave day, windy, good conditions, good met conditions, and a system that covers the whole country, covers a big area. And you can see that, you know, incredibly extensive in that way. Okay? And when you see that in the textbooks, when they talk about those conditions in the textbooks, and they talk about a 25 knot wind, it's the wind required to generate something like that. And obviously, for paragliding, you don't need something like that. Okay, with self-blade, yeah, you want something like that, but paragliding you don't. Okay. Any other questions or observations?
What generally, when you say it's the mountains that are generating that at 10,000 feet, the mountains aren't anywhere near that?
No, it flicks up. If we can mentally go back to the earlier slide, it tends to go over the obstruction and then flick up higher.
Right, okay.
Okay, for reasons that I don't understand. Okay. Is it homework?
Homework.
Yeah. But it'll flick up high. I mean, I've not done anything because I've just recently acquired oxygen in the glider, but someday I think the height record is about 30,000 feet in the UK. The height record, as far as I know, is about 55,000 feet in South America. So they flick up a long way. You know, obviously, South America, you might be going off a 15,000 foot mountain. But 55,000 feet is way
up. Might be propagated by higher wind speeds above, like the wind over the ocean creates waves.
Yeah, maybe. I think in terms of this, it's very much, it is generated by going over that obstruction.
Right.
But I think it's assisted by the fact that the wind speed increases with altitude. Yeah. But I don't think we're talking, what you're talking about there is a situation that we all see when we look at the sea, when you've got two fluids of dissimilar density, one flowing over the other one, and you get the ripple effect.
Yeah.
And you definitely get that, obviously, with different densities of air flowing over each other in a shear layer. So you'll get wave in the sky, you can get wave in the sky, you know, in the middle of Holland or somewhere near Peterborough where it's dead flat, or over the ocean where it's dead flat, say at 5 grand or 10 grand. And it's being generated by the shear between the two layers. It's not being generated by any obstruction as such. And probably if you had some kind of glider with a motor, if you get into that, I would have thought you might be able to sort it, I don't know. But that's really not what we'll reference that, but that's not really what we're talking about. Any other questions or observations?
Is it pressure dependent? Is it more likely to happen in low pressure?
Good question. Yeah, very good question, because I forgot to mention that bit, didn't I? Where are you more likely to get inversions? Yes. Why? Not necessarily you, anybody, but you if you can. Yeah, and what's the definition of a high, what creates a high pressure system?
Descending air mass.
Descending air mass, yeah, slow subsidence. And what happens when the air slowly subsides?
Stratospheres.
Right, why? You mentioned it earlier on. If it's slowly descending, what's happening to it? Yeah, it's going to compress, isn't it? So you get a warmer layer at higher level as a result of the compression. Is everybody happy with that? Okay. So if you look, again, I must admit, the first wave flying I did was in the Pennines. And in the Pennines, it always seemed to fit the textbook. Okay. As you probably know, the Pennines is just a sort of series of hills that run down the country, somewhere between sort of Carlisle down towards Sheffield. And the wave coming off the back is kind of like textbook all the time. But in Scotland, you seem to get wave in the most bizarre situations. Okay, there's a warning for you. You know, so you never want to say, couldn't possibly be any wave today, because I've been caught out by that one a lot of times. Okay, but in terms of the textbook, you kind of want to be between a high pressure and a low pressure area, kind of on the edge of the high pressure. Why don't you want to be in the middle of the high pressure? Yeah, bugger all wind, basically. So you want to be on the edge, so you've got some wind, but you want the inversions. Okay, so that's a great question. Thanks for that. Anybody else? Okay. I have to say, the more questions you ask, because I'd forgotten about that bit, the more you'll get out of it. Okay. Next slide. Right, the dangers of weight. And I nicked this slide, because it's a semi-decent drawing, so it's obviously not one of mine. Imagine you're there on your paraglider and you're on Annack Moor, alright? And your wind meter's bust. Or you're stupid. Okay? One or other. And you take off. And the obvious, you know, is actually blowing about 30. Okay? Maybe 35. Call it 30, that'd probably be enough. So, obviously, what's going to happen to you is, you know, is you're either going to go up, back, and into all this lee side rotor. So that's an obvious risk, an obvious danger, yeah? It's strong, you take off, you're going to get blown back, all right? What happens if you're on Bishop, which is another good wave site, and the wind, you're not on the top takeoff, but you're on that one that we all use about the third of the way down. Yeah, and you think, well, it seems all right, Dave's up there flying. I shouldn't have said that, should I? Somebody's up there flying, and he's obviously okay. And this is, I'm speaking from experience, obviously. And so you think, that must be all right. But your body's screaming, don't take off. This is too strong. You know, you pull the wall up, and you think, Jesus Christ, I've got concrete. Can't really be that solid. And you look around and you see Dave sitting there with his boots crossed, you know, having a whale of a time. You think, well, A, he's up there, so I've got to go up there. And B, it's probably all right, isn't it? You know, so you pull the bloody thing up, and you know what happens then. You turn around into it, and it's fine for a second or two, and you cruise out, and then all of a sudden, you think, shit, it's not going anywhere. Of course it is. It's going up, but it's not going forward. I'm not sure it's just a temporary gush, you know what? And you carry on up, and then you start to drift slowly back, as in this scenario here. Why is that not a problem at Bishop? Yeah, it's flat on top. In fact, it's better than flat. It's got those depressions. I mean, you know there's a wall further back. This just shows you I've been there. Okay, but you've got all those depressions. So there's a good chance, if you don't panic and keep pointing into wind, and I shouldn't be the same as when the white sat there on front, but you just sit fat and pretty, yeah? Be ready on your sea risers, okay? And when you touch down, grab the sea risers, and you'll probably be alright. You just get embarrassed and a bit dirty.
Your grand deep name.
Okay, so bear that in mind. I once did a flight, I'm sure several of you were actually there. It was on God Gunnock. Again, Dave was there. And I'm going to use it as an example in a later slide. But everybody's flying. I got there late as usual. I took off. I think I had a 50% collapse almost immediately. Okay, that was the subwave turbulence, which I'll talk about in a minute. And then we got into wave. Everybody was in wave, getting really high. But when you got up into the wave, you weren't going anywhere. You were climbing up, and you had about 2 kilometres forward speed, if that. And I remember my thoughts then was, I don't like this. Because I'm used to having some control over the glider, you know, I can fly forwards. But in this instance, unless you put on a lower bar, you weren't going anywhere. And I suppose I panicked. I didn't like it. So I pulled big ears and flew down, basically, and then flew back to the ridge, because there was no lift on the ridge further in, and I'll explain why in a moment. But afterwards, I kind of kicked myself, because I think, talking to Dave afterwards, he said, well, you know, you've got a flat top hill, it's heather, so it'll grab your wing, if it's really strong when you land, it'll tangle up your wing, which is what you want, to stop it. Okay? So you want scrub, if you've got scrub and heather and a flat top, no worries, as the Australians would say. Okay? So kind of bear that stuff in mind. I mean, again, I'm not encouraging you to take off in strong winds. What I'm really saying is if you've got a hill like that, never, ever take off if you think the wind's a bit dodgy. If you've got somewhere like Bishop and you think it's a bit marginal, well, it's your choice, but if you're going to do it anywhere, do it on a hill like that, okay, where the top's pretty big, flattish, and ideally this heather or something to grab your wing rather than the barbed wire fence. So much the better. The Morfords is a bit like that too. That's not a bad place to be blown back. Okay, if you manage, sometimes you find the wind's not too strong lower down, you actually get up into the wave system, but it really is too strong. Okay, it's a 25 knot, 30 mile an hour, 30 mile an hour job, plus. Then obviously the next thing that can happen to you is you've gotten into the system proper, but you end up down in that. And that's, you know, that really would be bad news. Okay. So those are the obvious dangers on a proper wavy day, as in a strong wind day. Okay. Anybody think of anything else?
Presumably, if you're in a situation like that, trying to skid off one direction, one side, is not going to help either, is it? Because you're going to still be in the wave.
It depends. Yeah.
One time, with that Bishop, it turned out to be tandem above me. I didn't realise. I managed to crab off the north end, which I didn't end up right over the back.
Right. It's varied. I don't want to get get into the example too much, but my advice on Bishop would be not necessarily if it's wave, but if you stay over the biggest bits of the hill, the wind speed tends to be less. Okay? And what's actually going on there is that there's more vertical component. Okay? So in terms of your wing, it kind of experiences, you know, there's more vertical and less horizontal proportionately, so that your wing is experiencing, if you like, less of a headwind. So you'll do better. If you go to the lower bit, then there's less vertical and more horizontal. And I've tried this about three times before. The little bubble said, you idiot, get back over the big bit, right? And you tend to be better off. The tendency is to try and get away from the big bit because you kind of want to fly down, but all I'm really saying is you might find you've got stronger winds flowing off down the lower bits because you've not got that obstruction.
I remember I thought the bowl on the first corner and it was not no better. I ended up actually going right off the north end.
No hill
at all.
Yeah.
Before I actually lost anything.
It can get stronger. I think if you can safely get a bit away from hill and use bar, then bar down in front of the biggest bit is probably the best way of doing it, I think. Yeah. Okay. I think we'll go to the next slide. So the obvious dangers, which I've shown you in the diagram, you get blown back over the hill into the rotor. The big rotors, which we showed you. What do I mean by shear layer turbulence? Can we go back one? Anybody know what I mean by shear layer turbulence?
That's the area between the bands of different speed of air, which are very rubbish.
That diagram is the nearest one we've got. In my rubbish diagrams, which I've done, and I always show you that layer cake, right? Unstable air, stable air, unstable air. Well, the bit where the two rub together, you get shear going on. Okay, they don't sort of rub together smoothly, and you get turbulence and eddies there. Okay, I'm sure we've all desperately or otherwise gone out to fly on a winter's day, again possibly at Bishop, possibly anywhere else, okay, December, January, whatever, and it's been a nice steady breeze up the hill, quite cool, 5 degrees, maybe zero at the top, the odd strange kind of puff coming from different directions, as if it was thermic, but it isn't. And then we take off, and it's not rougher than we've ever known, but a strange kind of roughness where stuff's coming out. You know, you can't really thermal it. Normally it's rough in the summer. We label it thermal, and then it becomes fun. Okay? But with this stuff, you can't label it thermal because it's, you know, you turn and it falls over that way and it rocks back. That's the shear layer. No wave, just a shear layer.
Is that squirrely stuff?
West Lomond, yeah. Yeah, so we live fairly near West Lomond. Sometimes it's northwesterly in the winter. I'm too lazy to come down to Tinto, so I'll go and fly West Lomond. But the bad news about West Lomond, it's good and bad, depending on who you are, is it's just downwinds from a very resonant system of hills for generating wave. Okay? So if you take off there and paraglide it, you're usually a little bit out of the wave system, just underneath it, in the shear layer. And it's, you know, the glider invariably is quite rough, and I don't think anybody else has flown in West Lomond and found this, Stuart.
True.
Exactly, I call it squirrely, and it's my way of saying, fucking horrendous. But I don't say that, because you don't say that, do you? Call it, or I treated it with respect, which means I was terrified. Okay? It's the macho kind of way of talking about it, isn't it? So yeah, but in the winter, that's a shear layer. Not doesn't necessarily mean there's any way, but it's a shear layer. It's, to be honest, for me, it's the worst. I've kind of not given up flying in the winter, but I like to see other people take off first and see how they get on. It's kind of not worth it getting kicked to death if you're not going anywhere, if you know what I mean.
What you're flying
yeah, it could be.
Yeah,
that could well be the case, or it could be that just the wrong height. I think if you can get a hill that's above that shear, you know, in the winter there will be an inversion at a certain height, and it seems to be the case, it's probably about 1500 feet. So you've got a very stable layer, and then probably an unstable layer on top of that.
Yeah.
And probably if you go to bigger hills, where you're well up above, you know, you can fly in the bit above the 1500 feet, then you're all right, or stay below the 1500 feet.
I originally thought it was the wave was trapped below an inversion, and it was getting rocked up and down between the inversion and the ground.
But the way you're
demonstrating it is that the inversion is a solid heavy piece of air.
Usually, yeah. In terms of weight.
And sustaining that motion for whatever reason the physics
keeps
moving and keep it constrained.
Yeah, I think in the winter it's maybe a bit different. Yeah, I think basically what happens is, I can remember this quite distinctly, camping in the Glens, it was in the Lake District in January, and getting up and it was about sort of -6 on the campsite, incredibly cold. But if you walked up the fell, about 1500, as you walked up it got warmer and warmer, and obviously you're walking out of that particular inversion. But anyway, let's not get too sidetracked. Okay, so shear layer turbulence. So if you're near the underside of the wave system, it's going to be a bit rough. And the stronger the wave system, the rougher it's going to be. Okay. So if you're underneath what you might call a real wave system, like that one in the satellite photograph, on a paraglider, bad news. Okay. The other thing, of course, if you do fly, there is a point where you're going to have to land. And when you do land, it's going to be a strong surface wind and turbulence and so on and so forth. Okay? So that's another risk factor. Again, just to put this in, if you're doing a conventional thermal cross country from anywhere really, and you go up on a windy day, fairly, you know, top end, what kind of place should you pick to land? Okay, that's not a bad one, yeah.
Big places,
yeah. Again, we probably all know this, but I just want to make it a health and safety issue. I just want to make sure we all know this. Where the valley opens out and widens, okay? Because where it opens out and widens, the wind speed at that level gets less. It's Bermuda's theorem, isn't it? Something like that. We've got a physicist that will explain that to you, but I'm not going to do it right now. Choose somewhere wide and somewhere big, a big field. If you land, you know, the fence end of a big field, again, if you get dragged, you're just going to get dirty and embarrassed. Nothing bad's going to happen. So big open area, big field. And to a certain extent, kind of, you've got to use the big hills to get your lift and so on, but if you actually think you're going to start coming, you know, you think you might not get any more lift and you're coming down, scoot off to somewhere wide and big. And it's the same in this situation, obviously, okay? If you've got any choice. Inability to descend. Is this true? You're getting sucked up by a massive wave system. You know, you're taken off on Bishop. Initially you think, whoa, I've got this right, I'm in the wave. And then all of a sudden, you know, it clocks up, 6 up, 7 up, 10 up. And you think, and you start to think, actually. And you've just gone through, you know, 4.5, 5, 6,500 feet, and it's starting to get a bit cold. And it's still got 10 up on the vireo. And it's harmonic. Alright, it's not going anywhere, it's not fluctuating. And you're starting to drift back a little bit, but you're okay, you're putting a bit of bar and you're still going up and everything. You can actually physically see the world go like that. And you, believe me, you can. Okay? You can see those, then you just come over the lenticulars and you're just going like that. And you're starting to think, you know, maybe it's gone to 7.5. And you're beginning to wonder. Okay? Is there such a thing as an inability to descend? How would you get out of that?
Cross through the wave.
Yeah, just go downwind. Because we can't go back to that original picture, but you remember the original picture that we've got, it goes like that. Just go over the back and you'll find masses of sink. Okay? Hopefully not much in the way of turbulence, but masses of sink, and you'll go down just as fast, faster, because you've got your 2-knot decelerate anyway.
Next one.
Yeah, it's the next one. Good, give us the next one. Really adept at that.
Alright,
keep. The other way. Oh, good. Just go over the back and you'll go down. Okay? If you can get us back forwards. So they're really using. You know, again, I've heard people talk about, oh, don't get in wave, get to a situation where you can't descend. It's just not the case. Just turn downwind. Okay? And you will come down. When you hit the sink, you will come down. And quite fast. So it's not a problem. So therefore, hypoxia is not a problem. Okay, getting too high, not having enough oxygen, it's not a problem because you can always. So that's nothing to worry about. Same goes for hypothermia. It's not like a thunderstorm where you get drawn up and you can't get out of it. You just turn downwind, take it into the sink. Maybe turn back into wind when you get in the sink, so you don't go too far from where you want to go. Well, in the case of Bishop, so you don't end up out of the North Sea. Alright, don't just keep going on. But you'll come down. Now, if you get blown back into the wave cloud, again, one thing you might find is you're going up. Remember, we said in classic wave, the wind gets stronger the higher you get. So in that situation, on a paraglider, you're probably going to find yourself in a situation where you're coming up the front of that wave bar. Remember, mm-hmm. One of the earlier pictures. And initially, you're doing fine as you come past the lower edge. But as you get near the top, you come up 5,000 feet of cloud. You start to drift back into it, and you push on bar or whatever, and you're still drifting back into it. What do?
Keep calm.
You could put big ears on and try and descend where you are, but again, probably better just to turn into it and try and keep flying straight till you hit the sink.
So when you hit the sink.
If you can, I would be tempted, and it depends on the situation. I'll talk about this now. If you've got a normal, and you can't really say such thing, a normal series of wave bars like that piece of art on the wall, okay. If you find you're getting dragged back into the cloud, or you don't want to go any higher, then you turn downwind, and if you're not getting drawn into the cloud, come over the back, turn into wind, park over the blue slot, and descend. Okay? If you're getting drawn back into the cloud, then turn downwind and wait until you fly out of the cloud on the other side, and you will be in the sinking bit. So once you're, you know, comfortably clear of the back end of the cloud, turn back into wind and descend. I mean, you might want to go cross country for a bit, so just keep going, you know. You might find yourself in a situation where you often get good wave is when you've got a warm front coming in, okay, and the front kind of fills in the system. It creeps into the system. It's kind of spooky, right? So you'll be sat up there fat and happy in the sunshine, having a ball. But you have to keep your eyes open, because what you find is the cloud is feeding into it, and you'll find a blue gap. The moisture level is increasing, and the blue gap beneath you will close. And not only will the blue gap beneath you close, but the cloud base, as the moisture increases, will start to come down. Right? Which in the Vale of York on the back of the Pennines is not a problem. But in the Scottish Highlands, that's a problem. Okay. Again, not likely to happen. It's not likely to happen to you if you're on a cross country and a paraglider in wave, but it is something you need to be aware of. Okay. So if you see that happening, this is what a sensible pilot does, is pop over the back of the bar and get down. Okay. But it can happen. You know, very often you get good wave just before a front comes in. So obviously, at some point during that day, things are going to fill in. All right, but the kind of waves I'll explain later on that you're going to be flying in, or you might fly, is pretty short-lived. So you're probably not going to get that kind of thing. It's just a health warning. Okay. Any other questions on those bits? So, like I say, if you take off in a real wave system where the wind's quite strong, too strong for a paraglider. Then in terms of the ones in heavy tight, they are a real risk. Okay? So, you know, we need to think about how you can be aware of that danger. I think that's my next slide, but I'm not really sure. Not so obvious dangers. Beware of light winds on a strong day. What could be happening here? Good, yeah, you might be under the peak.
The wave's going in and out of phase.
Good, again, yes, the wave might be going in and out of phase on your particular hill. Okay, so it might be out of phase, and therefore quite a light wind. Anything else?
Yeah, part of the wave's right on the hill itself, so it's got a big vertical element to it, so you can easily penetrate nice lift. Yeah, you don't feel the 25 on the other. It feels more like a 15.
I know what you mean, but if it's a proper wave system, I think you'd feel it. Maybe if it's the light wave, then you probably, what you're saying is you might climb out in that, but when you get nearer the top, you might find yourself going back. Yeah, that makes sense. Anything else? Okay. It is a question. It's, you know, it's really a question about wave phase and where you are in relation to that system, which is what I'll come on to next. But you want to be thinking of the waves. I mean, I'm not trying to scare you off, but I'm trying to make you aware. It's a river of fast moving air. If you turn up on Tinto or Bishop or Gargunnock, and you're sat on the edge of the ridge there, and you know the grass is kind of moving a bit, but not that much, and it seems quite a nice day. But you've looked at the weather information in the morning and you know that it has the right conditions for wave. Like I said, I'm not trying to wind you up, but you know that maybe somewhere out there, a bit above where you are, a bit in front of where you are, there could be this river of air doing 30 miles an hour. Okay? And it's there, you can't see it, but it could be there. So you need to be A, aware of the signs in terms of the meteorology, yeah, the weather forecast, but also aware of the signs that you see around you, both on the hill and on the way to the hill. But like I said, I'm not trying to scare people here. I'm just saying, you know, that we all know now from what we've said so far that that's how a wave is. You know, there might not be any lenticular clouds, and it might feel just fine on the edge of a hill, but you know, on certain days there could be something there. Okay. Now, this is the bit I said earlier in terms of the wave phase changes with temperature, wind speed. Thermal activity affects it. Sometimes thermal activity will break up the lower layers of the wave, but still leave the upper layers intact. So you might have wave in the morning, it might disappear by lunchtime. It'll still be there, but you won't be able to get to it. And it will be that, you know, the thermal will dominate through to about 4 or 5 o'clock. And then round about 5 o'clock, the wave will descend again, or reform at lower levels. Okay? And this can happen, as we said, it might stay stable all day, or it might change in 10 minutes. Okay, so again, that's another thing you need to be aware of. So again, if it's the kind of day where you think there could be some wave about, it's probably worth hanging about for a while before you take off. Or dare I say, as I said before, let somebody else take off first. Again, the professional approach here is to share your concerns with them. Yeah? Don't stay stum and let them go. You know, get a nice beginner. Don't do that. Share your concerns with them. And maybe, yes, if it's you're some few beginners around, you say, well, not really, I don't think it would be a wise idea. I think we should all wait until somebody else gives it a try. Or you might be, if you see the signs, you might say, maybe we shouldn't fly. And of course, it's up to the individual. Once you give, you know, you've done your professional duty, as I've described it, if you shared your understanding with them. Okay? And if you say something along the lines of, if it were me, from my point of view, I'm not flying, or I want to wait a bit, or whatever. You've done your duty. And then as pilots, as we all know, it's down to number one to make that decision, isn't it? Okay. That's what I would do. And there are days, quite a few days, when I turn up, and especially after that experience on Bishop, etc., where I think I'll wait. Okay, see what other people do. And so on and so forth. Okay? Okay, next slide.
Yes, I mean, how far off would you expect to see these conditions? Once or twice a season, or do you expect to see every week?
It depends on where you fly. Okay? If you fly at Garganuk a lot, then I would think a lot. Alright? If you fly at Bishop a lot, then quite a lot. And it'd be quite really the decent wave, more the squirrely muck that goes with it. Okay? If you fly on Weatherfell and Dales, you get the good stuff quite a lot. Alright? If you fly at Semmelwater in the Dales, you get the good stuff. I mean, for paragliders and hang gliders, quite a lot. But in my experience up in Scotland, and I'm, you know, not that experienced in the Highlands, but it tends to be places like Garganuk and Bishop. Whereas I think Tinto, it's not such an issue in that way. South side of Tinto, maybe. But north side, not so much. Doesn't mean to say you won't be affected. By high level stuff. And again, we'll talk about that later on. So again, it depends on the hills you typically fly. Okay. Good question. Okay, wave phase. Anybody tell us? You need to flip back really before. What have I said? You need to position the piece. Yeah. Thanks. What's wave phase all about? Anybody? Say more, can you?
So you have a standard shape like that. Phase would be a change in the frequency of it, making either the peaks closer together.
Right.
Or closer together or further apart.
Okay.
Or that whole system with the frequency staying the same.
Uh-huh. Moving relative to?
To the ground.
Stuff on the ground.
You are.
Yeah, okay.
I remember a day at Killin where the whole day was rubbish. There was a constant wind, the energy that took off went down.
Mm-hmm.
We were northwest of Killin somewhere some many years ago. And then there just seemed to be a change. The wind speed didn't change. Nothing else seemed to change. But we were taking off and going up, and it was only later that somebody pointed out that the likelihood was that the phase was coming down onto the surface of the hill that we were trying to fly on.
Right.
So anytime you took off, although it was an 8-10 mile an hour wind that's doing that and pushing you down onto the hill, but that shifted.
Yep.
And was then on the upslope basically.
Yep.
So nothing else seemed to change, but it was buoyant.
That the phase shifted.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that was maybe towards the end of the day when everything was
died down. Down just before the season. The usual season down just
you have the same luck. It's like luck. It's like yeah, if we go to the next slide, that's great, thank you. Oh, not that one. That one, sorry. There we go. The way I put it down is the position of the peaks and troughs in the wave system relative to the hills beneath it. Okay, so you've got your sinusoidal waveform, and where that is relative, presumably we're talking about the hill you're on. Okay, and if it's in phase, we'll see that. So picture phase changes. Think of that. I'm suggesting think of the spring being held horizontally, and as you said, you know, stretched or compressed. So your sinusoidal wave can be compressed, in which case the frequency increases, or it can be stretched out, in which case the frequency decreases. All right, we're okay with phase broadly.
You said phase change could be due to frequency change or position of the same frequency relative to the ground. So you could have a pattern
and
a downdraft and
stretch open. Yes, it doesn't have to be a frequency.
Or the whole system could stay with the same.
The whole system could shift. Yes. Yes.
You get more than one wave system.
Yes.
Either amplified or
attenuated. Yes. Yes. Good questions. Okay. Next slide, please. And there's another one of my rubbish graphics. Okay. So, and this fits, I hope it fits with what you were saying. A hill, right? And I said it, right? And I said it, it's out of phase. So in other words, the downdraft bit of it, yeah? Downdraft bit, is coming down on top of the hill. I mean, I found it quite difficult to draw this in a way because, you know, you've got big, thick lines and you want to be able to see stuff, so I couldn't have it going through the top of the hill. But the downdraft bit is coming down basically on the hill. So it would be exactly the situation that you described. It might be a soarable wind, might appear quite pleasant, but when you take off, it's not soaring. Okay. Some circumstances it can be rough, other circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be.
You're coming into land and valley. It's also tight.
Yeah, I can remember a situation. My advantage in paragliding is I made a lot of stupid mistakes when I was a hang glider pilot. Okay. I can remember one situation where we were on Semmelwater, a friend of mine, two of us, and it was too strong, and it was waving. It was obviously waving, it was too strong. I mean, I don't know why, we might have got a phone call or something like that, but we went to another hill that takes a southeasterly wind, about 5 miles downwind. And when we got there, it was blowing about 12. And great, so my mate rigs up, I rig up, and I've always practiced this little trick. I hung back, just taking off, and it took off. And he pretty much just went straight over the edge and just went down like it was nothing, like an elevator. And unfortunately, at the bottom of the field had just been muck spread. And my name was Mark, perfect into a perfect day, straight down and in the shit. So that kind of impressed that idea on me. You know, if it's blown out on one wheel and it's wavy, don't go somewhere else. Just give up and just pack up. Because it's out phase, that's how it'll be. And obviously in phase is when you've got the trough in front of the hill and the vertical bit is coming up the front of the hill. So you take off into that and you get amplified lift, basically. You get richer plus the wave lift. So that's really what we mean by phase. And as you were saying, the whole system can move, or alternatively, the frequency can change. And that really is just to do, like I said earlier on, changes in temperature, changes in pressure, changes in wind velocity, blah blah blah. It might be thermal activity during the day, so it might be okay in the middle of the day, and it might get better in the evenings, or the other way around, the weather might have more of an impact, so you know, it can change. So you might be on the hill and it's okay 1 minute, but if there's wave around, it might get bad later, it might get better later. Any questions on that bit? Okay. Next slide. And I've laid the point probably, apologise for that, but I just really wanted to get this across because this is where they're kind of not so obvious dangers. Okay? In this situation, it's in phase, you know, classic where you're taking off into the wave. Okay? And that, you know, you get that happens. And the wind is going to be strong, okay, on a classic wave day, but it's going to be smooth. You know, people will remind people coming to land, they say, oh, it's unbelievably smooth, that's smooth and lifting. And I'm sure you will get days on Tito on the north side where there is wave about.
A lot of people will experience
yeah.
wave of some sort of, and most
It's not really thermic, but it's incredibly buoyant. And that's, if you're getting a bit higher than you normally do in a ridge lift, and it's not really thermic, then it's probably wave. Okay, next slide. This is obviously the outer phase, again emphasising the point. You might have a soarable wind, and the wind in the air beneath the wave system, but because the bulk of the air is descending on top of it, you won't get, it's not soarable, you'll go down. And it can be choppy, it can be rough. Sometimes it can just be smooth, and you take off and you fly and just go down, and you can't understand. You put your wind meter up, and Christ, it's blowing 18, and people are just going down.
It wasn't quite as strong as that, there's no big testing.
Yeah.
Strong enough.
Well, sort of.
Big hills, up in the valleys.
Yeah, down into the trees as well, of course. Okay. So same again, might happen at Tinto. You get those days when there's a decent wind blowing, but it's kind of scratchy and not very nice. And again, that's probably what's going on. Okay.
So because that's under a peak, are you likely to hear a rotor? Are you likely to hear a rotor in front of a hill? Is that going to be higher up?
Yeah, good question. Again, if it's a proper wave system, then there could well be rotor in front of the hill. Yeah. Probably. If it's a proper wave system, all the signs have been that it's too windy, you won't be there. Okay. Chances are, in the kind of situations we've described, where you can fly reasonably happily, but you may be going down, then it's not a proper wave system and there won't actually be rotors underneath it. Okay. But not necessarily. We could go to the next one. Now you might have a situation. I think this was a bit like the Gunnock situation that I experienced. Again, I've drawn it, I had to draw it a long way out to differentiate it from the earlier one I did. It probably wasn't that far out. But imagine that's Gunnock, and the wave system was a little bit out from the ridge, but not as far as that looks. So you'll take off, and you'll be in the shear layer. So you take off, and it's choppy and a bit weird. And, like I said, I got 50% collapse. More than a bit weird. Okay, and that, like I say, is the shear layer. And then what happens is, obviously, if you get the squirrely bit, the shear layer bit, and all of a sudden it kind of goes smooth, and it also feels a bit stronger. Right, but you start climbing, and then, of course, what's happened is you've taken off, you've come out from the hill, you've come through that layer there, and boom, and boom, and away you go. Okay, but you will find, not necessarily again. We could fly in it, so it wasn't that strong, so there wouldn't have been rotor. Okay? But there still would have been shear layer, because you've got 10 mile an hour wind meets 20 mile an hour wind. So there would have been a shear in the field.
Certainly flying in Gunnock, I've experienced almost 600 to 700 feet in a second.
Yeah.
And it's quite disconcerting.
It is.
But I didn't have any turbulence.
Right,
it
just
went.
Yeah. So that'd be out of phase, wouldn't it? Yeah. And again, when I bottled out, because I felt I wasn't actually drifting back, but I just didn't have much forward speed, so I thought, I don't like this, I've not got control of it. So I blew out, and I think things had changed. I'd gone further down the ridge, where the ridge is further back. It was further back from the wave system. So when I blew out and flew to the ridge, there was nothing on the ridge. It went straight down by the farm there, and I had a hell of a long walk back to the car. I felt pretty stupid about it.
That's when you didn't go down. You talked about flying out to the farm. It was a nice smooth lift. And we're soaring it for a good long time. We flew out to the farm. And we left the farm, it just went. Could you go up to probably the centre of the top?
Yeah.
We just got the left phase in front of the hill.
Could
it? When you get out there, it was like going down for like big years, whatever. You're just gliding along, and suddenly
If you think of Gunnock, it's not that far downwind from some pretty big hills, isn't it?
But there's a wee step out.
There is.
That's when it emphasises it.
Yeah.
It just comes, so it'll keep it rolling.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Gunnock, if you want to experience some wave stuff, Gunnock's a good place to go. I'm not so keen, actually. But there you go.
Just concerned now that you've got the wind farm up.
Yeah, that's right, I was going to say that. If you're not, if you go back. Okay, now any other observations about that?
See, in real life, if you're like this, the phase of the lift, the up and down, it's not really stationary. It moves about.
Like, yeah, it can be just, you know, like imagine like a journey that's, But I mean, it can be pretty steady for quite a long time, and then sometimes it can jump, you know, it can jump half a mile or a mile, just like that. You know, you can sit in the fat and free and you're doing all right, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's gone. Or equally, you can be sitting on the front of the wave bar, happy, and then all of a sudden you're enveloped in cloud because the one in front has come back at you, or the one behind you has come forward over you. When the wave, when the phase shifts, it brings obviously the lenticulars move as well. So you could, like I say, you'd be sitting there in clear air looking down through a nice blue slot, and all of a sudden you're in the lenticular, and it's not because you've moved, the system's moved over you. Okay? But again, you don't worry too much of that. It happens more in the stronger systems now. Okay, any other observations?
Well, you mentioned a couple of times again, wave at Tinto is more likely to come from the north as opposed to from the south.
No, I think it's more likely to come from the south. I think you're more likely to experience wave that has an impact on your hill story on the south side, because the hills are closer. I think you're more likely to, on a kind of a good wavy day, you're more likely to experience high-level wave that affects your thermal cross-country on the north side. That makes sense, but I've got a few diagrams to try and explain that. But if I don't come back to it, please force me to. Okay. Anybody else? Anything? No? Carry on. Okay. You mentioned Kili. When I went back to the gliding club, fairly recently, Port Moak. And I talked to the guys there about the wave, because when I had worked there as a gliding instructor, 15, 17, 18 years ago, 20 years ago. But I, as a gliding instructor, I did some wave flying, but not, you don't go far away, because everybody gets about an hour, so you can't go that far. But what I learned from the guys there was that Killin is what they call a hot spot. Okay? And what that basically means is that on an average day, if there is ever such a thing, which there isn't, the wave might be sort of getting you to 10 or 12,000 feet around Scotland. But there are several points where you'll get much higher, where the wave is much stronger. And it's because of the size of the hills in front and the phase of the hills in front. And Killin is one of those hot spots. And apparently that's where we typically, they have a thing about diamond height, which is about 17,000, 18,000 feet in gliding. And that's where we send people to get that. Okay? That message sunk in, yeah? So it's a hot spot. And what that means is, you know, strong lift, strong wave systems, and are there. And I can remember a time, probably shouldn't mention it, I won't mention any names, Treehouse and Bob. Okay? And we're up at Chihalin. It's blown a hooly. I think Treehouse had a go at flying, and it really wasn't flyable. And so we all come back down to the cars, and Bob says, "Oh, let's go to Killin. It's often light at Killin." So we trot off to Killin, and sure enough, it was flyable. But I have to say, when I got to the edge, and, you know, I've been flying since just after 1980. So that's, what, 30-odd years of experience. So I get to the edge, and I'm kind of instinctively, I'm thinking, I don't know how to feel this. There's wave here. You know, I've not looked at any signs, just, you know, my body says something a bit odd here. So to be honest, I kind of hung back, and I think I actually packed up and walked back down the hill. That's how I felt, though. And it took Bob and another guy. They took off, and they did all right. I mean, they went to cloud base. They said one of the guys got sucked into cloud and went off downwind, and they were okay. I mean, one guy came out, was covered in ice and snow, God knows what else. But he'd had a good time. He'd had a good time. There was a bit of me kind of regretted it, but when I heard about what the gliding boys were saying, I thought, well, maybe not. Because basically what's happening is over the top of Killin on that kind of day is you've got, you know, the wave is there, it's in phase, but it's further out. So you fly in this area here, it's moderately lifting, but kind of quirky because you've got the turbulence, the shear turbulence. And there are big cumulus, but the cumulus will form underneath the peak. So if you get too high, you're in that system. And I think guy from Paul, he was talking about being unable to penetrate. And he said, I turned down women, I was doing 17 kph at one point. So obviously he'd connect, probably what he'd done is go up here underneath the cumulus that you can see, and then he'd gone poof, and into the system as he went downwind to run away from the big cumulus. And that's when he really went. Okay? And my advice would be not to do that. Okay? But again, I don't want to. So if you think it's a real system, if you know it's very windy elsewhere, it's probably not a good idea to seek out a hill where the wind is light and say, yeah, I'd be okay. You see what I'm getting at? Because I think that was a real wave there that day. And in other words, we shouldn't have been fine, really. But there you go. But apparently, Killeen has a reputation. And the reason why it has that reputation is because there's a big wave system over it. Okay, but so it's your choice. I'm not saying anything. Okay, the warning signs. I've rattled on about these earlier on. The forecast. If the boundary layer wind is 20 mile an hour above, so borderline for us, there might be wave. Okay, so when you look at your raft or whatever you look at in the morning, and the hilltop wind is 20 mile an hour, not alarm bells, but you should be aware of the possibility. If it's that strong, and it's not, the other thing to look at in conjunction with that is it's not a classic, it's not a 5-star thermic day, because it's inverted, alright? Then think about the possibility of wave, okay? The other thing to look at the same time, it's something we don't always look at. Some of us do, some of us don't. I think most of us probably look at whether, is it 5-star or not, and how windy is it? And if it's not, too windy to fly, and it's 5-star, we're off, and that's it. It's a good idea to look at the sounding, and see if there are any inversions. And if you go on to the next slide, some of you might be familiar with this, some of you might click on that. Now the one you're looking at is the red one, which is the environmental lapse rate, the rate at which things cool off as you ascend. Okay, that's the red one. And if you see it doing that, there's a big kink in it, then there's an inversion. Okay, and you can obviously see what level it's at. But if it's a big one like that, that was the weather forecast on that wave. Remember that wave picture I showed you where it was all across the country? That was the chart on that day. Okay, and if we go on to any questions about that? Alright, we go on to the next one. If you're not so happy with that graph, because some people find them a little bit difficult to read, okay, then just go to the form F41214, and you get a nice little chart with the temperatures at different levels, and you can just read them off. So again, you can see it getting warmer. It gets colder, and then all of a sudden it starts getting. You can see the figures, which tell you, and also tell you about the wind strength at different layers. Hands up, those people who are familiar with that one. Yeah, not so many. You get that again on the
Met Office.
Yeah, it's the Met Office. You can get at it through. Weather Jack. You get to that. You have to sign up. You only have to just register. You don't have to pay them anything. And you can get that. And that's nice and easy to read. Like I said, it tells you the wind strength at different levels, and it tells you the temperature at different levels. So in some ways, it's a better bet than just looking at RAS. And that will warn you. Okay. Doesn't mean, again, it's not flyable. It's saying, there's a probability that this will be the case. A high probability. Okay. Warning signs, you need to be looking for warning signs, because let's be honest, forecasts can be wrong. And as paraglider pilots, we know that only too well, don't we? Okay. Obviously, if you've got wave bars and lenticular clouds, that's a clear sign that there's wave about. Okay. Equally, if you've got blue gaps, lines of blue, like I said, cloud streets, you've got lots of cumulus around, but the wave streets seem to be organised across wind. Okay, so you haven't got any classic lenticulars or anything like that, but you seem to have blue slots across the wind. That suggests there's wave there. Okay, and that you see that quite a lot at the back of Tinsop on a northerly day. Okay.
Wait,
because under that typically, you know, good air masses coming in.
I'm thinking more in terms of you've got one after another, not just one, which is convergence, as I think you're suggesting. But when you actually see it going off downwind, and you've got blue line, line cloud, as I say, light streets, but through 90 degrees. Okay. The significant wind strength variations from place to place. And this one where I said, where you're driving to, we'll keep talking about Tinto as an example, where you're driving to Tinto, or you're driving to Gargano or whatever, and you're finding that every few miles or so, maybe 5 miles, maybe 10 miles, the wind strength is varying significantly. Okay? That's a sign. Remember, we had that diagram right at the beginning, where if you're under the peak, the wind will be very light. If you're under a trough, it will be strong. Okay, that is a clear sign. There may not be any, maybe a dry air mass. There may not be any cumulus, there may not be any lenticulars. That is a clear sign. The variation in wind speed as you drive along. Milky sky is an obvious one. Again, you build up a sense of, I can remember from my hang gliding days, you drive out the house, you look at the sky, and you know, think it might be rough today. But you can see it's inverted. And the wave might be there. Even if it's just inversion, it can be there. And on the hill, any marked variations, you know, in the wind, light, strong, rough, smooth, if it's not that thermic, it's more likely to be to do with wave, okay, and changes in phase, as you described on the killing or whatever. Okay. Just be aware of that, alive to that. Any questions or observations on that?
Maybe on like a pee break.
I was going to say, I was just looking at you thinking they're all whacked out, they had enough. Is that right? Okay, so thus far I've really been covering the scare stories, the health, if you like, the health and safety bit. The next bit, as the title implies, is about how you can make positive. We're having this discussion down here during the break. That you get the negative a lot of the time, and we're all, you know, we've all exchanged experiences that some of us knew were to do with wave, and some of us now realise they might have been to do with wave. But now we're really talking about, as I say, the good stuff you can do to do with wave. Okay. And this is really a recap of what I said earlier on. When you look at that SAT-24 photograph, that is what we would call a real wave system. Okay, that's the thing with the 24 mile an hour plus wind. That's the thing that we don't get involved with, okay? Because we're not, you know, structurally designed to cope with those kind of situations. But the point I'm making here, really, is, you know, that the wave, in terms of its impact on paragliding, wave doesn't just occur 5 miles, 10 miles downwind from big hills. As you saw from that photograph, it covers the whole of the UK pretty much. And therefore, on any flying site in the UK, flying a paraglider on the right or the wrong day, depending on the way how you look at it, you could have wave effects influencing your flying experience. Okay. As I say, some people tend to say, oh, we're too far away from the big hills, or, you know, Tinto's too far away from the mountains, and so on and so forth. But you see the picture, and you can see quite clearly, you know, you could be on the east coast and be affected by the wave. Okay? So certain conditions that can cover the whole country. And I think the additional point I make there is that most of the time when you're flying in Scotland, you're obviously flying in a fairly moist air mass, okay? A lot of the time. And on that particular day, it was a fairly moist. You see the amount of cloud involved. But we do get days, again, with high pressure, where there's not a lot of moisture around. And the wave system, just as extensive, could be there, but no cloud at all. Okay, so just if there's no, just because there's no lenticulars or whatever, it doesn't mean to say that the sky is not covered in a wave system. Okay, that's the first point. Next slide, please. Okay, that just emphasizes it. So some of these points we've already brought out in processes discussion. So we're just going to be talking about Hill's theory. Weak wave. Now, let me just fill this bit in. I don't think I'll cover it later on. Classic wave occurs in winds 25 mile an hour plus. Okay? You tend to get big systems, as you saw, big systems that last all day. Okay? You get guys down the gliding club. We even have a system where we email each other and we book a winch driver to come down at 6 o'clock in the morning to launch us pretty much at dawn. Okay? And then they'll be up all day. One guy last year did 1,000 kilometres up to virtually to Orkney and back. And he did it because he started at 6 in the morning and, you know, he was still flying when it was, you know, he landed before it got dark, but he literally knew he'd fly all day, all daylight. So that's a proper system, that's a big system. Now, the point I'm trying to make here about wave and paragliding is you do get wave in 15 mile an hour winds or 18 mile an hour winds. And all right, it doesn't form the big systems. It might form a system that's, and I think I've given the figures in here later on, you know, it might be 6,000 foot wave bars, 6,000 foot high. It might extend for 50 miles. It might extend just a few bars, you know, 20 miles. But it's wave. And if you're on a paraglider, you can use it. Okay? But it won't be the big stuff, the big systems. And that's why it doesn't get mentioned in the textbooks. And again, remember, the textbooks are written by and for sailplane and glider pilots. They're not written for us. So the people, you know, the people who are writing this, they're not interested, oh, that stuff, that's rubbish, that's no use to us. So they don't write about it. But certainly on the basis of my and other people's experience, again, particularly the Dales Club, the amount of wave flying they did on hang gliders and paragliders, you get this way in lighter winds. It's not as high, it's not as violent, there's no rotor because the wind is lighter. But we can use it to do 50k flights, have a good time, whatever. Okay? And that's really what I'm talking about in that sense. So in terms of the hill soaring, when I say weak wave, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. You know, 15 mile an hour, 18 mile an hour. Obviously, if it's in phase, it can give smooth, gentle lift over a large area. You may not get taken up to 6,000 feet. You might simply find it's incredibly buoyant, and I seem to be able to fly anywhere I want. But it's not that. It's not thermic. That's wave. And I think most of us, if we're lucky, have experienced that at one time or another. Okay. Any time you get higher than you normally would do in ridge lift, and it's not that thermic, you know, you're not kind of going up like a cork and then coming back down again, that's what probably wave. Okay. Equally, you turn up on the hill and the wind's right, the wind's blowing 15 mile an hour or whatever, you take off and you go down, that's probably wave also, but it's out of phase. Okay, and we've understood that now. So that's the impact of wave on hill soaring. And that can be pretty much anything. It's more likely to happen 5 or 10 miles downwind for some big hills, but it can happen pretty much anywhere. Okay? Next slide, please. And this is probably my worst graphic. Okay? I kind of struggled with this one. What we've got here is a situation. Imagine, and I did have Tinto in the first drawing, but it's gotten worse than that. Imagine Tinto's here, okay? That's a northerly wind. And you've got a bit of an inversion, and you've got a bit of a wave system. Okay? Not the kind of wave system you would climb into, but it has an effect on thermals when you're doing a thermal cross-country. And it structures the thermals, both in terms of the nature of the thermal and where they release, where they'll be. Okay? And again, I'm sure when I describe this, when you fly, the thermals will be rough. They will be quite strong, they will feel as if they're square, and typically they'll feel as if you climb, when you're facing into wind, you climb quite nicely. But then when you turn downwind, you very often just fall out the back. and to anybody who's experienced illness like that, away from the hill. Yeah? Yeah. That was probably, we were probably being affected by wave. Okay? I've done a couple of flights of Tinto like that, where it's been quite rough, quite strong. And when I looked downwind, I could see this classic streets, but across the direction. There were forecasts to be streets that day towards Carlisle, okay? But they weren't. They were across, they were 90 degrees to the track to Carlisle. And it was because we had a bit of an inversion, and we had a weak wave system at that inversion. And the troughs, down flowing air, windier on the ground, less thermal formation, okay? Or if there is a thermal that falls, it gets driven along to light wind bits, and then it rises up, okay? Light winds, lifting air, thermals form, so you find a pattern, that under the peaks, the thermals will rise under the peaks, and they'll be suppressed under the troughs. So then you know the frequency. You know not to bother scratching around in something here. It's not going to get good. You just keep going, boom, keep going, boom, and you can see that. Okay? And it's because the wave is structuring. You're probably not going to get into the wave. You probably don't want to get into the wave. Because downwind from Tinto, for quite a way, as you all know, you've got a 5,500-foot ceiling anyway, because of the airspace. So you don't want to be going into the wave. That's going to cause you a problem. But if you're aware of that structuring the thermals, your experience, and you, somehow it helps if you're getting kicked to death and you're getting, you know, little collapses and all the rest. If you, that's because it's wave. That's meant to be wave. It's meant to be like this. And somehow it feels okay and you carry on. You know, it's not the hand of God coming to get you. Okay. It's just the way it is. Okay.
So how does the wave actually influence the feel of the thermals? As you said, you climb up into the wind and you feel spat out.
Yeah.
I
really don't know.
Is it something you've observed? And
it will
happen
loads of times, yeah.
Right.
I mean, it seems every day I go out, it's like that. But it's partly due to the fact that they're coming up under an inversion.
Mm-hmm.
And inversion causes issue, you know, the thermal's forcing its way up, in a sense, and it's disturbing the thermal. But I also think it is to do with the flow of the wind as well.
Right.
But it's a cloud, you know, experienced it for years, in a sense. It's a bit like when you're on the ridge, and they say, you know, when you're in a thermal on the ridge, you should get a couple of extra seconds into wind.
Yep.
It's a bit like that. You've always got to apply the same technique, but mm-hmm. continuously as you go downwind. Okay? But that's precisely why, once again, I can't tell you. I can only say that's how it is. Any other questions?
You said that they're in fairly square.
What I mean by that is you keep falling out of it. You know, you're doing a nice, perfect circle, as we all do, but on these days, you know, you keep falling out, you know, you're not quite in it, you can't seem to core it, and whatever, but you do go up. Yeah, well, kind of. Feels like a square. It's the best way I can describe it. You do your level best, and you do climb. When you're in the right bit, you kind of get in the right bit, and you really zoom up, and then poof, it's a whole pile of rubbish for another. And then you do another one, and you seem to climb these verges. And I've only ever seen you look up and you can see its way, and you get used to it. So that's the way you go. It's going to be like, oh, look at the sky before I take off. I know what it's going to be like. But the advantage of this, again, someone like Tinto, for the inversion and the wave and the wind, again, what you find is quite strong. You get up near ground base and you really are hammering down wind. And the beauty of that, as a lot of people probably know, you tend to get the sea breeze coming in the solway third. But if you've got a nice inversion and a strong wind, you don't get the upflow of the air out over the sea to cause, you know, gravity pressure to push in the sea breeze, so you don't get hassled with the sea breeze. So it's another kind of compensation, in a sense. You've got all that rough thermal or whatever, but at least you know that when you get down the solway third, you're not going to be the sea breeze. Okay. Any questions? Any further questions about that? Seen that quite a lot. Just before we move on, bearing in mind that in most of the border sites, I suppose you've got this airspace cap, haven't you? But what you can do for fun, I mean, if you're doing it across country, probably you would consider this to be a waste of time if you're a serious cross country pilot. But if you were just, God forbid, just flying for fun, all right, you come up under the cumulus here, And what you can do, and I've done this a couple of times, is when you get here, instead of saying, all right, I'm under cloud base now, I'm looking down at my next thermal source and the next cloud, and off I go. Okay. Instead, you glide forward. Now you go a little bit into cloud and glide forward to the front. When you come out the front, you are, of course, in the wave. And you can get to ride up over the tops of the clouds. And that's quite nice. Okay. But you're wasting time. Okay. And obviously, again, if it's quite high and you've got the airspace at 5.5 grand, you probably bust the airspace. Okay. But if you're in a situation where you're not that, you know, you're not an XC hound and you're not that worried about it, but you want a really surreal type experience being above the clouds and so on and so forth, you can do that. If you get that feel when you're thermaling, you're dropping out the back and square and all the rest, you do get up to base, just cruise it forward to the front, and there's a chance, I'm not guaranteeing it, but there's a chance to connect with a wave. And it won't be, you know, like it won't be a real wave, because you wouldn't be flying because of a wave. And you'll go up over, maybe just over the top of the cumulus. It's quite nice to do. Okay, that's really what I've said there. That means any different can be affected by the way it may not be so constructed. The thermals and the thermal distribution, thermals may be suppressed under the troughs, blah blah blah. Thermals will be strong but rough under the feet. Gliding will have a tendency to fall out of that. Yeah. So the next slide. Okay, an actual wave XC on a paraglider design. So you're not using thermals, you're using wave. Okay? And I've basically said what I've said before here. Textbook stuff, 25 mile an hour, but you do get weaker wave, 15 to 20 mile an hour winds. They're smaller systems, maybe go to 6,000 feet, 7,000 feet, maybe typically 5, you know. Sort of thermal cross-country heights, okay, cloud-based heights. And they can definitely, you may get 40 miles downwind, and they can definitely be exploited by paragliders. And I think we've got an example here for the next one. I forgot the danger bit. Less than thermal XC. Because the wind's lighter, you've not got much in the way of the shear, you've not got the rotor at all. So it tends to be, the lift is smooth. And there's no, you know, like with thermals, it can be very rough at times, can't it? You can have collapses. In this stuff, you don't get any collapses. It's silky smooth. You know, it's like those ridge days when it's silky smooth. It's like that at 5,000 feet. So it's really beautiful to do. You've got amazing views. You're above the cloud, and it's dead smooth. Okay. Right. If you are lucky enough to get into the situation to do one of these things, you're probably not going to have, because it, like I said earlier on, because it's not real wave, it's not really a stable system. It's only going 15, you know, this is what it says in the textbook. It's only blowing between 15 and 20 mile an hour. It probably won't be a stable system. So it might only last half an hour, 2 hours. So you kind of want to get on with it, okay? If you find it and use it, you do use it. What you find with the wave, as we've already described earlier on with those diagrams, is if you want to fly cross country and you just climb up the top of the wave, the top of the bar, and then you turn and run over the top of the bar, what's going to happen to you when you get the other side of the cloud?
Sink.
Massive sink. And you're going to go plummeting, not plummeting, but you're going to be sinking pretty fast. And that's not going to do you a lot of good in terms of, given our poor speed performance, it's going to be quite hard for you to get through that sink and still be high enough to connect with the next bar. Yeah, you're going to get drilled in. You're going to get drilled in by that sink because we're so slow. Okay, so you can't get through it quick enough before it does you a lot of damage. But what you can do is bear in mind that these wave bars typically are not, as you saw in the picture, they don't go on. On forever laterally. They're kind of cigar shaped. So the cigar has an end. So what you do is you climb to the top of the bar, then run down to the end, and where it's just small, there's not much, if any, sink. So you run off the end and then go down. You've got the height, but you don't get the disadvantage of the sink. Okay? And you aim at, you don't aim at the thin bit on the next wave bar, aim at the thick bit, because that's where the strong lift is. Does that make sense to everybody? Give me an example of a flight I did down in North Yorkshire. Let's go to the picture. So basically you took off at Sutton Bank, climbed up in the wave bar, and it was only about 5.5 grand height, and it was above that, probably about 6 grand total. Okay. Went along the bar. Again, think about it, if you're going cross country, particularly where the cross country league works, you get points for different legs, don't you? You don't have to do a straight line. You're not just measured on straight line distance. So if you can extend your flight crosswind, that gains you points as well. So wave bars, great for that. So what I've done here is I've gone down the wave bar till it peters out, gone over the back to the thickest bit, down the wave bar till it peters out. I mean, I've done it like so I can get it all on the slide. Okay. And that's basically, in fact, I would have deviated more than that. I would have gone to there, I would have gone to there, I would have gone to there. And then it was about 4 bars long. And then it finished. Okay? What I've not told you, and what I never told you, was what you've got to watch out for. Well, you haven't got to watch out. Just one of the things that happens is that you can have a day with 8/8 cumulus, 8/8 strata Q. Okay, 8/8 cloud, total cloud cover. And the wave system will break that up. So you have blue slots, and you can fly there. Okay? But if the wave system collapses, it goes back to 8/8, total cloud cover. Or if you fly out of that area, it goes back to 8/8 cloud cover. That makes sense to everybody? So on this little flight that I did, I'm flying along happy as Larry, as it were. And I get to about here, and at this point, I'm probably about 20 miles from the North Sea. Okay, at 5.5 grand, in a reasonable breeze. And just down from that bar, about there, 8/8 Q. I can see ground at all. But I want to get as much distance as I possibly can. But I don't want to land in the sea. So there's that fight going on in my head, oh, let's keep going. So I glide down, and obviously there's a point where you just descend into the cloud, and you're kind of, you know, wondering what's happening. And it was fine. I landed in Lake Patricia, which was about 10 miles from the coast. Okay. But a little bit of a wind up, because the other thing you're wondering about is, what's the height of cloud base? But again, in weak wave, in those situations, you know.
This is a day's pre-GPS, or?
Oh, yeah, none of that stuff. Too easy. So. That's how can you do that, you know, that's what I was hoping for. Remember that wave flight I wrote about last year, last September time? That's what I was hoping to get on that day. I got about 3.5 grand. I was hoping to be able to pop. There were a couple of wave bars behind me. But by the time I got 3.5, the whole thing just poof, it just disappeared. Very short lived.
What direction are you actually facing along this path?
That's the wind.
If you're in a paraglider, the wind's going that way.
The wind's going that way, yeah. So when you fly along, just think of it as a ridge.
You have to face and sort of surf.
Gravel
along, yeah.
Just as if it was a ridge. Because obviously you wouldn't fly directly along the ridge because you'd go back over it.
And then you just check where it's in, it goes somewhere else.
Yeah, you can see it quite clearly. Again, the other thing you'll notice with wave is once you're under it, it's quite disorganized, appears to be quite disorganized. And then when you come up above it, it's as clear, and you think, well, where was the problem? It's as clear as a bell where everything is. So you'll be able to see which are the high peaks and where it peters out. So. Any other questions or observations? Okay. And lots of flights, I've done that. Lots of flights from Weatherfell, I've mentioned before, lots of flights from Semmelwater. They're good wave sites because they're in the middle of the system of hills.
They're quite low.
But they're quite low hills, they're not, they're causing any problems. Again, it should be possible on the right day from Bishop to the other places. Probably Killeen on a light wind day. Okay, so you've got plenty of places in Scotland where that can happen. I think maybe Tintern and Sutherland. Possibly. Gargannock's the Bishop, but the airspace is directly behind it. Okay. Next slide. Can anybody tell me where that is? Does anyone recognise it? You should recognise it. Well done. Yes, it's Bishop. Now, this is the thing called the hydraulic. This is the last, you'll be pleased to hear, the last thing we finished now, actually. This is called a hydraulic junk. Okay? And basically, what you've got here is an easterly wind, which is the inverted, okay, coming off the North Sea. It's coming over Bishop and kicking up. And as I said, all it does, it comes over and it kicks up quite abruptly, almost vertical. And then goes over the top and finishes. So it's not a wave system as such, like it's not multiple, primary, secondary, tertiary, and so on. That would be just like one wave bar behind Bishop. Okay? And try as we might, we probably don't want to fly that because it's another way to take off. And it can be quite turbulent. I've flown it in a sail blade, and it can be very turbulent. when that, I don't know about that activity again, but I've flown to 10,000 feet off that side of Bishop, believe it or not, which is kind of weird because it's a very little hill. Okay, but if you go to the next slide, yeah, I'm just explaining it. Now I have it. No, I'll explain it. Again, you might think, oh, yeah, it happens at Bishop. What's it got to do with me? On a flight from Tinto, going in the direction of Jedburgh, over the back of Coulter Fell, quite a low cloud base there, about 3,500 feet, maybe a bit under 4,000 feet. Gliding along off the back of Coulter Fell, going towards the next cumulus. The cumulus tended to be in lines across wind. Okay, there's a clue. But I went through, probably about a mile off the cumulus. I went through very smooth, two up. Now, because of my wave experience, I thought, if this is a thermal, it shouldn't be here, because the cumulus is there, the spacing's wrong. And the way it felt, I thought, this is wave. So I just turned the paraglider around, faced it towards the back of Coulter Fell. Again, a bit like that Bishop situation, you know, looking at the back of the hill, thinking, this is not good. What about the rotor and all the rest? That felt dead smooth. And just climbed up to obviously a little bit under 5.5. But that took me over the top of the cloud. And I did a very wicked thing. I just flew backwards and forwards for a while and enjoyed the view. But eventually I turned downwind and it enabled me to fly over that high ground that you have to cross before you get to the St Mary's Lock area. And so it got me through that bad bit, just a relaxed cruise above the clouds, and then dropped back below the clouds and started thermaling again. So we get that, round here, we get that in the borders. That can happen under the right conditions. You've just got to be tuned to the various forms of lift that you might encounter. And try and get a sense of, okay, this is thermic, this is what it feels like, and this is wave, this is what it feels like. Okay? And then you'll be able to change your style to fit the kind of lift you're encountering. That's really why I've included that as an example. And there was really no indication that should be there at all. But it was there. And again, some people might say, well, it's actually not a great deal of use for cross-country flying, but I think for me that day it's quite useful to get me, because a 3.5 grand cloud base, sometimes it's a bit tricky getting over that high ground, you'd be scrapping around for lift and there's some pretty bad places. So it was nice to get out of the high ground at high altitude. I think that's probably it. There's some further reading for the homework for those of you who really want to find out what it's all about. There's a podcast out there by Steve Hudson you might be familiar with. There's the Aberdeen material. That's a cell. Mark Palm thing is a cell plane thing. And obviously you've got your Tom Bradbury in your Warrington, which you've probably all already got. And just look on the web. It'll be on the web where you get the physics. If you really want the physics, and if you really want to know, why is this? Why are the thermals square? And why does the flick-up occur? In real terms, then probably the web will give you. There's lots of articles that I kind of began to look at and thought, no, this is no good. It's not fair to inflict that on other people that are on the show. So that's it. So if any other questions? If not, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
You didn't heckle. You said you were going to heckle.
Later. So, on a good day, apart from just the safety aspect of it, when you go out flying, would you actively look for signs of wave in the forecast and then expect it during flight?
Yeah.
Use it?
When you look at what I would suggest you do is when you look at the forecast in the morning, try and get a full sense of the possibilities for that day. Mm. And if that includes wave, obviously if the wind's too strong you won't go out.
Yeah.
But if it's marginal, then be alive to the possibility that there might be some wave influence. and you might be able to use it rather than just be put off by it, in a sense.
Yeah, and like the rule of thumb signs of that would be the inversion, strongish winds, and then probably the position and the pressure system that we're at.
Any other questions?
Do you know any pilots who actually, paraglider pilots, who actually actively search for wave?
I think that the guy
on purpose.
I know that the guys in the dailies.
They do that.
They'll be a lot go out.
Interesting.
We don't have to do that.
Interesting.